Okay, hello everyone. Welcome to the Wholeness Hangout, monthly video gathering that I hold with friends, colleagues, coaches, thinkers, philosophers, players around the world to explore what it means. Actually, you know, to be honest, to be explore whatever is on my mind that month. But the overall notion is that there is something fundamentally whole about us. And what does it mean to be whole? What does it mean to have well-being? What are the implications of that for living well? What does living well mean? And what's up with all that good stuff? Maybe another way to say it is, what's the relationship between spiritual principles and spiritual thinking and seeking and living to life, living life day to day, moment to moment, and how we do that? So today my guest is the delightful, many times 9-year-old Wynn Morgan. Not that many times. He's not as many times 9 as I am. But Wynn and I are at least provisionally going to be talking about what makes coaching work when it works. And I'm going to read a little bit about Wynn. Let's see here. Wynn has been coaching and training people. He lives in the UK. He coaches and trains people from all walks of life. He's worked with people from 5 continents for the past 16 years. He works with large international organizations to train and develop their people to improve their performance, and works as well with private individuals to help them live lives they love. He's coached Hollywood actors, singer-songwriters, CEOs, students, housewives, and entrepreneurs. And according to his clients, the results are life-changing. So we'll be looking at what is so life-changing about coaching. And we're a small enough group. I invite everyone to participate. I am going to mute folks just to cut down on background noise. And that said, if you mouse over the bottom of your Zoom screen, you'll see toward the center an icon with the words Manage Participants. It may not say manage in your case because you're not the boss, but you're going to see something that at least says participants. If you click on that, it will bring up a list of participants. And on that list, in the bottom part of that box, there is a button where you can raise your hand. You click that button, it will show up in front of me, and I will unmute you and we can talk. There's also an icon at the bottom of the screen that says chat. You can click that. If you click that, you can send a group chat to everyone, which is fine if you're feeling very chatty. Or you can click on my name and send a note, or Wynn's name, and send a note to just us. And that's another way that you can ask a question or make a comment. I should say that this is being recorded and we'll be sharing the recording. So if you don't want to be heard or seen, take yourself off camera and don't talk. Other than that, I think we're good to go. Hi, Wynn.
Hi, Molly.
Hey.
Hello, everyone.
So what is it? I just saw this. Somebody was unmuted, and I thought, what's going on about that? And it's you, Wynn, so I guess I'll leave it alone. What comes up for you around this idea of coaching and why it works? Is there a particular place you'd like to start there?
Well, what I first thought when I started coaching and getting paid for coaching, I thought it was just something enough that they would see reason to do something differently. Mm-hmm. A change of mind, that there would be enough of a benefit compared to a disbenefit of change. And I'm not sure that's entirely wrong. However, I think there's a lot more to it than that. or probably less to it than that. So what I get today is that when people see through what they thought was true in the past for them or for the world, and they see it with a fresh set of eyes, with a deeper or a different meaning, things change. And it's that then within them enables them to do different things, try different things, think differently about themselves, the world, their relationships, the work, whatever it might well be. And that's the kind of shift. And it can be a huge vertical shift in their kind of thinking and understanding about something that means that nothing looks the same again. Mm-hmm. And that's the deeper part of it compared to when I first started coaching, probably for the first 10 years of me coaching, and what I thought was a pretty successful coach, and clients thought so too, was doing this quite well, going from a certain location here in their life towards this, which mm-hmm. was, you know, helping them get the next job, losing weight, overcoming a phobia. But all of that can melt. All of those restrictions that we put on ourselves, all of us put on ourselves, melts when we see things differently. So another way of saying it, I think, might be we see through the illusion that we've created.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's just an illusion, and then things just never look the same.
So rather than, for example, working with someone to... Well, before I go there, I should ask, what was your training initially when you first did coaching? What tradition or context did you come out of as a coach?
Well, I read a lot in my time when I was in large organizations about developing people.
Okay.
And there was coaching for performance, the inner game of work, those kind of things.
Yep. Both of those.
Which were great things to still go back to. In fact, mm-hmm. there's an awful lot of really good wisdom in them. And then the GROW model was the kind of cornerstone.
Okay. I don't know that model, actually.
So how it works is that the way I did it anyway was I'd have my blank piece of paper before my session with a client, and I'd put in TGROW, and the T was just, okay, topic broadly, goal for today, which was the G. So what do you want to get from today? Reality, what's happening around right now? What are the options to change that reality towards you? What do you want to do? And from that, the W was the wrap-up. Okay, so from those different options, which one do you like to go for?
Okay.
And that could be, and often it was around, okay, which one intrigues you the most? So it was about, you know, breaking paradigms and breaking their kind of thinking. And that would work to a certain extent.
And when that worked, this is what I'm real curious about. I come out of, like you, one, just a lot of life experience and business experience and reading. So Tim Galway's book, and I actually saw Tim Galway speak at my first coaching conference many years ago. He really made an impression on me. Sir John Whitmore in Coaching for Performance made a strong impression. And then I trained with a couple of different coaching schools in the States. One, the Academy for Coach Training, which is now an organization called Invite Change, that did a model based on the Coaches Training Institute model of coactive coaching. And just give this for folks who are watching who may be coaches and curious. And then I went on to do a program in ontological coaching with the Newfield Network that got a little closer to what you and I are doing these days, in that I remember one of Newfield's images was observer, action, result. And a lot of coaching at the time was focused on changing the actions to change the result.
Yeah.
And in the Newfield program, we looked at change the observer to change the options for the actions to change the results. So there was an awareness of the role of the observer in creating those actions. But there's still, and I think that was very powerful. When I think about whether it's the GROW model the new field model, the coactive model, it looks to me that when people wake up on some level or other to the fact that they could see something differently, that that's where the leverage really always came from. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. The other thing I'd add is that when they see it differently, what they see is the truth behind it.
Now, talk about that. I'm curious about that.
So, as an example, one of the major things I've done this year in the corporate world is around helping certain businesses with their business development, which means going out and create and actually proactively calling clients that they might not have spoken to for 6 months, or a contact that they met once but have never had the will or the want to enough to actually call them, or they get in their own way. And I remember standing up in front of a global group that were having their annual conference in Paris back in the spring. And effectively, there was one thing that they heard from my kind of half an hour, which was, clients have got problems. Why would you get in the way of solving them? As opposed to me, if I'm one of their directors, knowing that it's a good idea to do that, but I might get shy or I might be afraid of somebody saying no to me on the phone. So therefore, I won't pick up the phone and call this person I met at a networking event 6 weeks earlier. Or I won't call someone I last did business with 18 months ago because I think it sounds needy. Mm-hmm. When they see the truth behind it, that's when things really do have that change. As opposed to a reframe.
Mm-hmm.
NLP reframe, which is let's trick the brain into thinking something slightly differently. And I think that trick can work, but it works, I personally, in my own experience, it works on a short-term basis.
That's been my experience and kind of gripe with NLP, is that I don't think you have to be terribly sophisticated before your brain says, screw you, you're not going to trick me. At least that's where mine goes.
Well, mine too. And then effectively, because that's what the whole NLP thing is, right? How to trick your brain into thinking differently.
Yeah. It's like, as soon as you decide not to play.
Right. Yeah. Then what? Okay. Yeah. There's no ball to play with because the brain's taking the ball home.
Right. So what is it that people are seeing differently? Can you talk more about this truth behind it?
Well, the way I describe it when I'm seeing people for the first time is the difference between the content of thought and the nature of it.
Okay.
So the content of thought is that, for example, that I'm going to meet somebody for the first time tomorrow morning, client for the first time, and we had a quick Skype conversation of half an hour last week to set up just to sort of, you know, a bit for me to understand her and for her to get a feel about if she wants to work with me. And in that conversation, there are loads of things there that I could look like I might be able to help her with on a kind of horizontal basis.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about, that would always be about thinking about, okay, well, she might think that now she's just turned 30, that she has to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We could tinker with that. Or we could then tinker with the idea that she has, that she won't be happy until she's got her perfect career. Or she won't be happy until she's living in a really great place and in a great relationship. I heard 4 or 5 things on that half an hour Skype talk. Now, For a selfish coach, that sounds great because that's a lot of work, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of repeat business. But it's fundamentally unsatisfying because whenever we get to whatever that location is, in that relationship, in that job, in that career, in that anything, we figure out, well, that didn't make me happy. So what is it, right? And going back to what I said a few minutes ago, the nature of thought is to help. So one of the things I'm looking to do tomorrow, albeit that things might be completely different, I don't know what she's going to say tomorrow.
Right.
But my thinking right now, based upon the conversation we had last week, is that I'm going to help her see the difference between the content of thought and the nature of it. And the nature of thought is that it just passes through. The nature of a thought, that it constantly comes through us. And what we do is we hang on to some of those things, because we all have at least fleeting thoughts of insecurity, low confidence, not being enough. And we could make a list that would be, 10 pages long of A4. Very easily. All of us have those fleeting thoughts. All of us have those memories as well of being humiliated as a kid. Okay, being rejected. All of those thoughts can come back and can come through us at any time. And what we innocently do is hang on to some of those and start making a meaning of them because we look at the content of them. Well, when we see that the nature of thought, that it, in fact, when we aren't engaging with one specific thought, one specific memory, or a worry about the future, and the thought is free-flowing, none of those individual things matter so much, because we know that they're just thoughts that just come and go. The nature of thought, that it's free-flowing, and there'll be another bus coming along in a moment that you might prefer. And even if you don't, when you just notice and witness thought, life looks far easier. And what it also does is that people get content right now. Right now. Are happy right now. Pretty much regardless of circumstances. And I'm saying pretty much because I just haven't come across one yet where it isn't true for.
Yeah, that's been my experience. And I'm also curious about the what then. So I know in my life, it still occurs to me to be a good idea to create and engage. I've spent a lot of time actually stripping down my life, because at first it was like, I don't need anything to be happy. And so things got very, very simple, even simpler than they had been, and always been pretty simple. And what I'm curious about these days, and find many of my clients grappling with, is, okay, so everything's fine. On what basis now do I take action? On what basis do I create? Because I don't create out of fear or lack or attachment to results. So how do you work with clients? It's like, what's the rest of the conversation? They leave the first hour, they've seen through their thoughts, then what?
Well, there's quite a few different ways of answering that. And the one thing I would say is that when that noise of what you just described then, of that thinking that comes up, the insecure thoughts, the little thinking that we get attached to now and again, and that gets in our way, the interference, well, there's a different resonance. There's a different resonance of, from my experience, and a few other people explain this to me as well, when they are in that place of being far more clear, where their thinking isn't as muddy, is not as fast, when that slows down, we hear a different voice that sounds completely different from that thought. And it feels like it's, for me, it feels like a different place in my body. It feels like it's not coming from me. It feels like something else.
Okay.
That's just, sometimes it's really clear that that's how it is. And well, I would tend to follow that. The other thing to say, if people are stuck with the question, so what do I do? They haven't understood it yet. They haven't understood what we've been talking about yet, because the doing thing is, the answer to your question is whatever you want. And if that's an issue for people, if the paradox of choice is such a big thing, well, that's just, again, someone caught in their head.
So do you have coaching conversations beyond that first? The way you're describing it, it sounds like maybe, and this could be, I know some practitioners who just work with people a few times and their clients see things differently and go away, and there's no kind of project-based or long-term coaching going on.
And quite a few of mine are the same. Mm-hmm. Quite a few of mine I will see three times. One, yeah. There are a handful that I'll see just once, and that's enough for them to go,
right,
okay, I'm done. Okay, and you know, I'd rather not, because I know there's a lot more that they can see.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are others who I've worked with. Well, there's two people I've worked with for over 3 years, and that's consistently.
Yeah.
That's every month. And there's quite a few people it's over a year. And we're still having deep and meaningful conversations. Well, I think they are anyway. They come back.
And they're coming back. So yeah.
Because insights just keep coming. That's the beauty of understanding the nature of thought, the nature of, you know, what we call the insight understanding of life and the three principles. I think that's endless.
Mm-hmm.
Personally. And well, for me, I know that's true, because I mean, I've been kind of studying it and working with people, as you know, Molly, for the last 4 years on this. Having first of all been introduced to it 5 years ago and thought it was a complete load of bunkum, I thought it was nonsense. But I couldn't have thought it was that bad because I came back, right? So
yeah, I'm curious. I'm very curious about what were you seeing when it looked like bunkum, and what did you see that got you curious enough to come back?
Well, I went to I didn't realize that this person was a three principles coach. I thought it was still he was an NLP coach. Okay. And mm-hmm. I went there to be fixed on some things that I thought I needed fixing. And when he said he don't need fixing, I thought, well, what have I come to see you for then? This is a waste of money. And I traveled a long way for this. Spent a lot of money on it. I thought, really? Okay. Well, this was great. And then when I listened for a while and listened for the next few hours probably to what he was saying. It was Michael Neal, by the way. He was brilliant with me in his patience with my kind of obstinate nature at the time of saying, what are you doing, you charlatan? I don't think he used those words. I must have used some different ones. But I heard something about that it was okay now and I'm okay now. But I had a fear to that. And my fear was, well, if I was okay now, I would just live under the duvet. I wouldn't get up in the morning.
Right.
Because I've been there. I've done that. When I felt low, and when I've been depressed and down on myself, right, and down on life, well, I could willingly spend my life under the duvet in that mode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Me too.
That's what it's like. That's what depression is like. We just say, hey, duvet's my favorite friend.
That's right.
Just turn over the pillow is the hardest part of the day. Well, that's the most physically active part of the day. But what's interesting as well is that what I found though through experience is that when we see through the freedom of the illusion that we've made up about ourselves and our life, it's not a duvet. It's everything's play. Everything's play. So it would seem to me like it would be like offering a lion living in Africa the idea that he could go and live in a zoo, and the lion would say, yeah, okay, I'll do that. They wouldn't. But that's what I was seeing in myself. That was my own fear, that I would think, okay, well, if I can do anything, I'll just do nothing.
Oh, that's interesting. I just want to pause and kind of let that settle in, because that image. Really resonated with me. That somehow, sometimes we have a an we're not even aware that we're thinking it up this way, but that there's another level of thought that somehow is making it up, that given the choice between a lion on the savannah and being a lion in the zoo, I would choose the zoo. Or that given the choice between making up a life of whatever, creating thigh cell phone wallets, for example, or lying under the duvet, I would lie under the duvet. That's really interesting. I mean, it just really touched me.
Can you tell me more about that?
Well, it just seems that I just feel when, like, I've seen more deeply than before that that concern about what would I do or why then would somebody act is a that too is a thought, that too is a artifact of thought. It's made up. It's like it's not actually a fundamental place. It's not like you drop into the realization that there's nothing you need to do, therefore you'll lie under the duvet. All you've dropped into is another set of thinking that you haven't seen through yet. Does that make sense to you?
It makes absolute sense to me.
Yeah.
And that's what I think. I took a while before I saw that, because I still didn't believe that the truth would be that I would see everything then at play. Mm-hmm. As opposed to everything out there being fear. Mm-hmm. So that's a completely different life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that might be a really short way of answering what's transformational coaching is, when people have a completely different view of life.
I thought you were going to say when people realize that everything is play.
Well, yeah, and therefore when everything is play.
Right, right. I just want to remind folks that you are welcome. I've muted people just to cut down on background noise, but please feel free to either use the participant control panel, which will pop up if you mouse over the bottom of the screen. Toward the center, there's an icon that'll say participant. Click on that. And at the bottom of the box that comes up, you can raise your hand. I'll see that and I'll unmute you. You can also, thanks. Michelle left us a note. Thank you so much, Molly and Wynn. Loved what I heard. Sorry I had to leave early. You can also chat with either or both of us or everyone if you're so inclined. And you can send a private chat to me if you want to ask a question or make a comment and not be identified. I'll pass it on to the group without identifying you. So, lovely, lovely. So, another aspect that I thought it might be interesting to point to about what makes coaching work when it works. And this is where I see, again, I'm always looking for, because coaching worked before to some extent. You know, the kind of coaching I learned before worked. And I've been watching the more masterful practitioners in my circles and wondering, what are they doing that works so beautifully? And some of them, they're not using three principles language. And they're not, they don't appear to be teaching principles. But what I observe is that they very consistently are doing something I would call directing clients to the reality of their own wisdom. And continually inviting clients to find their own answers, to listen to their own wisdom, to move in the direction, find for themselves, discover for themselves what wisdom is. Does that make sense to you?
To me, I think it's a very good way of summarizing it. as to what we aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other part of what I think I try to do more of now in learning more is help people see the humanity behind anything that they think they're struggling in.
Tell me about that. I'm cute. That sounds so beautiful.
So as an example, I recorded a client from my mentor, a conversation I was having with a client a few weeks ago. And it was, I think, fifth or sixth session with this client. And he said something like, yeah, I'm really good at getting down on myself. And I said, yes, you are.
Mm-hmm.
What I could do more of with that is to help that person see that that is what we as humans tend to do.
Mm.
It's not a him thing. It's a human thing. We all do that. So what makes that such a big deal?
Yes.
And it levels the playing field away from us all being caught up in what we think is our own very personal bubble of what we are challenging, as opposed to, well, we all do that.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that's what being human is. It's the part of, we didn't necessarily sign up for it,
mm-hmm.
but that comes with a territory. Yeah.
Yeah. That Susan asked a question to speak more about the difference between transformational coaching and other models. And it seems to me that this is one entry to that conversation. I can hear George Pransky or see George Pransky in my mind as I'm listening to you about this, because he's very adamant about leveling the playing field. And he also talks about one way we can talk about the difference between transformational coaching and many other models of coaching. I'm reluctant to say all because I don't know all, but other models is Wynn was using this horizontal direction to talk about performance coaching. And then he made a reference to a vertical direction. And the reason I saw George come to mind is I can see George saying something to the effect that one way to take the conversation vertical is to take it out of the personal. Sometimes I get down on myself and generalize it to the human. Well, that's what people do. What do you make of that? And do you want to make anything of that? What do you see becomes possible for people when you offer that generalization, or for you, if you're thinking something personal about yourself and then you realize, oh, this is just another one of those things that human beings sometimes do?
Yeah, well, that happened to me recently as well, within the last month. I had some thinking about myself that I thought I was being an idiot about something. Well, I was, but I was being an idiot along with everybody else, because anyone with that thinking would have been an idiot too, right? So I wasn't more or less of an idiot than anybody else with that going on. And I just felt relief.
Yes.
And it wasn't Wynn Morgan being an idiot. It was, oh, the system would make me feel like that as a human playing the human system.
Yeah.
Right? And therefore, that whole relief, I wasn't battling me or battling something else anymore. I was just like, oh.
It's not like there's a permanent self with a set of problems to solve or fix. There's more of...
Right. Yeah. And I knew that the problem would sort itself out.
Yeah.
I mean, we could have another conversation about what a problem is. I think that's another hour, by the way. But but on this, it helped me. I wasn't then caught up in here about this is a Wynn Morgan problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw it then as a thought, human thought, which meant that I was already seeing it completely differently.
Mm-hmm.
And what's possible from there was to say, well, okay, well, what else? What else could I be more conscious of that would help me see through anything on that plane completely differently?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And right now I'm not able to articulate what that is. I can't really say the words, but I just know the feeling of knowing that there's something deeper beyond my personal thinking, where the whole thing about being connected,
yeah,
the whole what it is to be alive, what it is to have a life force behind, you know, these molecules and cells and everything, and having a consciousness,
right?
All of a sudden life looks like a miracle again, and a wonderful miracle again, as opposed to me being caught up in a temporary blip of an illusion of that I made up, that was a problem that I...
Well, and the miracle includes the capacity to make up problems.
Right. So we see the beauty in the trick of thought.
Yeah.
The beauty in state of mind at certain points when we're in a low mood, that looks permanent, that it looks real. That in itself is an amazing, that's a miracle.
Yeah.
That we as humans have this amazing capacity of taking our imagination, which is what thought is, right? Of taking imagination and looking at it in a way that looks so solid, real, and permanent.
Yeah.
That's an amazing thing that we have a capacity of doing.
Right. In June, I had biopsies on my breasts, and the lowest point in the whole breast cancer journey, which is behind me, folks, and I'm fine if you don't already know that, but the lowest point was the morning of the biopsy, and for whatever reason, as people do, as human beings do, I got into a very low state of mind. And I started thinking, oh my goodness, this suspicious area, I could even feel myself with my hands. If it's that palpable, it must be stage four. I'm dying. So far, believe it or not, that wasn't tragic information. But the next piece, I've wasted my life. And I just went spiraling down. I'm a slime ball. I'm selfish. I've never done anything for anybody. I've wasted. I mean, I was really low. And on top of that, I've got all this spiritual understanding, which clearly isn't helping at all. I'm clearly a phony and a fake. Yada, yada, yada. Just stirring around. And in the midst of it, and all of this probably only lasted maybe 3 or 4 minutes, but it was really compelling. And in the midst of it came this little thought on the heels of, you spiritual phony, look at you now, was, you too are doing the best you can. Fancy pants Molly Gordon, who think you should be better than this, you know? I mean, it was with great compassion I saw it. It wasn't a mean fancy pants, but I just busted myself. I thought, I'm sitting here thinking I should be an exception to the human experience and never be low. And then a week or two later, or a day later, I don't know, I flashed back on those moments and I saw, oh, given my state of mind and the way I was thinking, that's the only thing I could have seen. No fault, no foul. And somehow, and this is another distinction of transformational coaching, we're pointing to something beyond language. So we're telling stories because they point to an experience that can't quite be condensed and captured. Seeing that, not just that it was made up, but that it was innocently made up, and that that's how it feels when you're caught in that movie, and that's how it feels to every human being caught in that movie, I found very exciting. I cracked up. I started to laugh. It was funny. And it gave me a great deal of freedom somehow. Anyway, it's still one of my, oddly enough, that morning is still one of my favorite memories, because it so vividly illustrates to me how we experience thought as real. And the point isn't to stop experiencing thought as real. The point isn't to never experience another painful thought. There's just something that begins to unfold as we see the phenomena.
Yeah.
Jan observes that, not sure which Jan this is, but I'm thinking I might know who. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm happy for Jan, whoever you are, that I just realized that relating any situation back to the human experience is part of why I've found coaching easier lately. And my clients, mentees have been having more meaningful insights. Jan, if you wanted to talk about that, I'd be happy to unmute you. I don't want to put you on the spot, but that sounds really intriguing. So send me a note if you're willing to talk about that. And letting go of the judgment to the thought or the movie. Absolutely. Absolutely, Lisa. Would you like to say something about that, Lisa? I can see you if you... Okay, let me find you in this list. Hey.
Hey.
And I'm is Lisa sorry. Correct pronunciation?
Actually, it's Lissa.
Lissa.
Like Alyssa, but without the A. But I think that that's a really important piece. It's the piece that I've been looking at in my own life and with my clients' lives is this attachment that we get to whatever the story is, and letting go of the judgment allows us to have that kind of perspective that allows us then to get curious because we're not so wrapped up in the idea that it's right or wrong. Like we let go of the rightness and the wrongness of the thought or the perception so that we can see it from a different perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well said. And I loved just watching you, the way your hand popped up, I thought was very evocative because that's almost how it feels. Like, whoop, you bounce free of this system that had you in its grip.
And I have to say that I really appreciate this acknowledgement of our humanness in all of this. I think sometimes I've been a therapist for 20 years, and so oftentimes from a therapeutic perspective, you come in as this expert, and I like this idea of coming in instead as just another player in this theater of life where we're all experiencing these thoughts or feelings, and the ability to just sort of breathe through our own experience and be comfortable with that allows us to then just hold the space so our client can develop their own internal wisdom as they are able then to have that experience and the safety of somebody who's like, I'm just another person who's experiencing not maybe the exact thing, but the human experience in my own way. Yeah. And I love that you were talking about like that sense of my own human experience. I like that a lot.
Thank you so much. That's grand.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Jan, go ahead.
So just one thing I wanted to say to that as an insight that I had back in September, so a couple of months ago on this, because I'd kind of battled with that whole thing about judgment of myself and seeing the movie and then give myself a bit of a battering on my head because I hadn't seen it as a movie and exactly movie what you're talking about, okay, until then eventually it pops and the laughter comes. Well, I saw something that is so simple. I'm either in my head or I'm not. And if I think it's bad when I see that I was in my head, then I'm in my head. That's it for me, okay? So if I'm judging the fact that I was in my head, I'm in my head. And if I'm not, then I'm not in my head. Nothing more. And that's been freeing for me to simplify it, because I like things quite simple.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. But that's all I'm playing with myself in my own nature of recognizing what's true in me in my life. Am I in my head or am I somewhere else? Somewhere else could be anywhere spiritual, anywhere out there, and that whole connection and we've been talking about or alluding to anyway,
mm-hmm.
is a wonderful place to be. And it's okay when I'm not there because I'm human too.
Right, right. Nifty. I'm going to give Jan the mic and see if her mic is working, and then we'll go to Yvonne. Okay, Jan?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, perfect.
Hi, hey. Jan.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I've been having lots of conversations in the last few months, and what I'd noticed was, and I'm so glad that everybody's been speaking to this, and Molly, you were just talking about how George Kransky would look at things. And yeah, I just noticed that when I'm in conversation with somebody, the more I relate it back to, like, this is just part of being human. Like, you know, we don't get a pass from, like, being angry about things or, like, getting upset with your partner, or these are just things that happen, and it's not indicative of any sort of, like, we need to fix something, or, you know, you have these really bad thought patterns that we need to change, or, like, there's nothing to fix with it. And what I've just found is that when I'm talking with clients or my mentee, that it brings a lot of comfort almost immediately. When you can relate it back to them, you just see or feel them take a breath and just go, like, oh yeah, okay. Like, everybody has this. Like, there's nothing wrong with me. Like, this is just something that happens. It's just not a big deal. And the sooner I recognize it, the faster it goes away. And, like, there might be times when I'm caught in it for days, and that's fine. And it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything about me personally as a human being, right? That it's just, everybody has this. That's why it's such a common thing. That's why you could go and talk to, you know, a room full of people about this, and you'll see people, like, nodding their head, like, oh yeah, like, I've been there, I've done that. So it's not, you know, you're not isolated in this existence and, like, feeling these things and just being human.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really helpful to, I just recognize that. And then when you put words to it, I was like, oh yeah, that's what's happening. It's like, that's so cool.
Neat.
It just brings a lot of compassion in, you know, and I feel like that's what's missing a lot of times. Like,
yes, it's exactly the doorway to compassion. I think there's something so tremendously powerful about compassion for the self, compassion for others. When I had that little realization in the biopsy room that I was doing the best I can, what came into that was just this tiny bit of compassion for myself. And somehow, I'm going to use a word that, authentic compassion, whatever the hell that is. but compassion expands.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I had that little bit of compassion for myself, I was connected again to the miracle that Wynn was talking about.
Yeah.
And I didn't immediately pop out and go, I'm so happy, I'm part of a miracle. But a fundamental shift started inside.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad you mentioned compassion, Jan.
Yeah, it's been huge for me, because it's definitely something where I haven't had compassion for myself a lot of times. So I keep waking up to that. It's like, oh wow, like, I'm so hard on myself, but then I'm always, you know, encouraging other people to find the compassion within themselves, to have compassion for themselves. It's been an interesting journey with that. But I'm definitely I'm seeing both clearly, but really I think initially I was seeing more clearly because I used to be super, super judgmental of other people and myself, obviously.
Right. Equal opportunity judgmental.
but I think I first noticed that I would have compassion for where other people were in their journey, and that the way they're seeing things really makes sense to them. And that's why they're seeing what they're seeing and why they're expressing themselves the way that they are. So it's just interesting. I'm loving this conversation. So thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jen.
Thanks.
Yvonne, you are unmuted, my friend.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too, sir.
Good to see you, my friend.
Hello, Vin.
Hi.
Long time no see.
It has been. It's been probably a good 6 months, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And things happen all the time. New insights. And you were talking about the difference between, or someone wanted to talk about the difference between transformational coaching and other.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there is any difference, because all that is the label. And when coaching, any coaching, creates a change in someone, it's transformation. I come from the NLP world, and I've been following Michael Neal since 2006. And it kind of sneaked up on me, his transformation to the three principles. So when I bought his online course, Coaching from the Inside Out, in 2012, it was like coming home. And these last months I've been watching Sid Banks lectures, and he's all very often talking about, don't listen to my words and keep it simple. And that made me think, and I think it hit me. Someone asked me about relationships, how to make a relationship work. And what came out of me, it's simple. Don't believe everything. Everything is an illusion made by thought. And we have our lives. We are a living creature. We have our capacity to think and to make this real by our consciousness. And that makes life easy, simple, when you understand it, when you get it. And as you said it earlier, I heard you, if you get the question, how do I do that? You know they haven't got it. Because in that course, Coaching from the Inside Out, Michael was talking about the engineering and the physics. And when you know the physics, the engineering is no problem. And
thank you so much. It's very good to see you, Ivan.
Yeah, you too. And you're looking so fine, so well.
Thank you.
Love you.
I love you too. Bye. Oh, so Wynn, my goodness. Where do we go from here?
I don't know. I'm pleased to say I have no idea.
Wait a minute. You were in charge of the closing.
I was? Okay. Well, that means I am now.
We were joking before about our preparation or not. Yeah. You know, there's something actually that Yvonne said that matches something that's been in my mind, which doesn't make it true, but what the heck. The way I heard it is that when coaching works, when psychotherapy works, when any of the things we do to heal ourselves work, it's the same mechanism, the same actual thing happening. So in that sense, there are no differences. The difference I would say about coaching from a three principles perspective is that it starts from that understanding, rather than kind of accidentally intersecting with it.
Yeah.
Or incidentally. Accidental doesn't give, I think, enough credit to the intelligence and wisdom behind some of the other systems. But there's a way in which, for those of you who aren't familiar with the three principles, they should say a couple of words about that. It's what's come to be known as the three principles originated with an awakening experience that a man named Sidney Banks had. Sid was a welder he retired to Salt Spring Island, but I think he was actually in Nanaimo, Canada, British Columbia, in the 70s, and he was innocently going about his business, and he got zapped with an awakening experience. I don't know what's up with that. It seems to happen to people who are not trying to have them. And what he saw came to be known as the three principles. And in many ways, it's the same fundamental understanding that underpins, it looks to me, wisdom of the great spiritual sages. The genius, if you will, of what Sid saw is that he was able to articulate it in such incredibly simple terms, and that a relatively small amount of ritual process and procedure has grown up around him. So it's a fairly pristine and simple understanding that is extremely potent. So if you want more, there's heaps of information online on the webpage where this replay will be playing and where you got the link to this, there are resources. So that's a little context for this. Anything popping that you're moved to share?
Susan's just put a comment in there, Molly.
Oh, thank you. I love this. It seems as if we're okay with blood flowing through our veins and that we can't control that process. We accept it as a human requirement / experience. We struggle with the concept of thoughts flowing through our minds, at least the ones we don't like. Except we think it is human to do so. It's up to us to filter them and do what's best for us, for others. Thanks for the lovely chat. Thank you so much, Susan. That's a beautiful thing, and I'm going to reflect on that. We don't try to manage those physical processes, but somehow we haven't caught on to the same level of ease with the mental processes.
Yeah, we try to do things such as make the veins and the arteries flow in the other direction, don't we?
Right.
But with veins and arteries, we know that would be a silly idea. With other things in our experience, we think that's a really smart thing to do.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it even maps to the creative process. Just because I can't control the flow of blood in my veins and arteries doesn't keep me from, you know, if I'm so moved, running in the New York Marathon or, you know, trying to express myself with my body. So, but somehow we have the idea that we have to control our mental experiences in order to manifest mentally. So, and Jane says, this is such an inspiring conversation. Thank you. I'm transitioning from performance in theater to coaching people with performance anxiety, and I'm deeply interested in the creativity that awaits in embracing the sum of an artist's lived experience rather than taking aim at a constellation of symptomology. I love Wynn's comment on seeing through what you think is true, because then everything changes. Yes. Thanks a million, Jane. Very exciting. It's an entirely different game once we truly stop looking at symptoms and problems.
Yeah. And the nature of anxiety, when people understand the nature of it, its importance completely vanishes.
Yeah, that's been a biggie for me because I've had lots of anxiety on and off in my life, and I thought it was very significant. And it's, sometimes it's informative, but it's not a problem. Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for being here. Thank you, Wynn. Anything you'd like to say in closing?
Well, yeah, I think the one thing... The difference between this direct approach, Molly, that you mentioned is the fact that we look directly behind the scenes at what creates our experience. behind the curtain, as opposed to looking for the symptoms, which is all in the behavior and the performance. So what you talked about, the incidental, that sometimes we peek behind the curtain, behind the screen to see what's going on. When a transformational, even sorry for using that word, I know it's just a word, but behind the curtain starting from there, that can make the whole conversation completely different. And that's what would probably be 20 sessions that can happen in one or two, mm-hmm. 5 minutes.
Yeah. Beautiful. I'm glad you brought it back around to that. That's lovely. Thank you, Wynn, very, very, very much. And thank you, everyone else. Thank you, Lissa and Jan and Susan and Jane for contributing to the conversation and Yvonne. And wow. Next month, it's eluding me. I have a guest and somehow it's skipped my mind, but the second Friday of December. And then on the second Friday of January, Sandra Koenig is going to talk to me. We're going to turn our eyes to business. We're going to talk about branding, of all things, and see how that conversation changes when you come at it with the kind of freedom of this perspective. So, yay, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.